Hi, this is Joy Rios reporting from a HEMA 14 conference in San Diego. I'm speaking with Dr. John Ellion with ChartWise. Thank you for being with us today.
A pleasure.
What do you think is going on with the ICD-10? Do you think it's going to be delayed enough? Do you think the providers have enough time? Do you think that they're going to be able to make a smooth transition?
First, I think ICD-10 gets lumped together. That's like when people say, well, how's the real estate market? The real estate market's not uniform. It depends on where you are and what market segment you're in. If you're talking to inpatient providers, payers, everybody's ready. Everybody was ready this past year. It's the outpatient that I think people are still panicking about. And I can identify with a physician. Most people don't understand that somebody who's in private practice is running a small business. It's a small business with a very small margin. Family practitioners, for example, they're not clearing a lot of money. You have to see a lot of patients, and you only collect half of what you bill, and then half of that goes to overhead and your staff. And to have to hire another person or another half person is very frightening business-wise. People are uncertain what this means. There's studies coming out saying, well, ICD-10 decreases coder productivity by 50%. OMG, what am I going to do? Then I need twice as many people to be doing my coding, and I can't afford that. So I think that's where a good deal of the concern comes. People are ready. Coders are ready. Inpatients, certainly, and even outpatient, the coding staff is geared up. What's happened with the delay is hospitals that were all geared up and ready to go, and they had budgets, and they had people, and they had bodies in place, suddenly go, well, now what do we do? What if they gave a party and nobody came? So they're reallocating a lot of those resources to tackle other things in hospital finance during this interim period, but they're still ready to go. I get the sense from all of the press releases, the news reports, there's almost no further discussion of delays. But, of course, then again, this last vote was a surprise to everybody. It was like 17 lines in the bill that nobody seems to know even who put them in there. The other thing that is very confusing to people is ICD-10 has been out there for a long time. It's been in use for a long time. What's new is ICD-10-CM, the clinical modifiers. And when people, anybody talking about ICD-10 these days, they're really talking about the CM, which is the clinical modifiers. And it's a big step forward. It's not a cure-all. There's still some holes in the coding scheme. But remember, ICD-9 has pages and pages and pages of TB diagnosis and has one HIV diagnosis.
Right.
It's just grossly out of date for what we're trying to do. Everything with healthcare reform, healthcare finance, equitable allocation of resources, almost anything having to do with money and healthcare requires accurate data. And how can you be doing accurate data with a coding system that's decades out of date?
So ChartWise, how do you guys help further, population health, statistics, or what do you want to speak to about ChartWise in particular?
In that regard, just as I said, anything having to do with healthcare finance, you need accurate and thoroughly coded data, and the cornerstone of that is the physician documentation. If it wasn't documented correctly, it can't be coded correctly. Yes, it won't be billed correctly, but let's just focus on the coding. And I have example after example after example. It's part of what I do when I speak at a national convention like this, is to try and get the coders to understand why it is. They're frustrated that doctors aren't writing their notes the way that they want.
Mm-hmm.
There is a term, acute systolic heart failure. Well, I became a cardiologist in 1983. I never heard of acute systolic heart failure. It's not in the cardiology textbooks. It's a coding term. It's not a clinical term. Okay, I figured it out. It was pretty easy, but there's all of these terms that are common everyday occurrences to the coder that doctors never heard of. We never knew there were different flavors of malnutrition that you've got to code. If I write on my note, if I wrote K2.3, every doctor in the world knows that that's a potassium of 2.3 and it's low. It's a wonderful medical note. It is 100% accurate and complete and conferring information. But the coder can't code from it unless I say hypokalemia. Then they can code. So there's an example of if everybody's writing K2.3, then nobody is getting the code of hypokalemia, and people would say, well, there is no hypokalemia. See, we're not even coding any of it when doctors have been writing that note left and right. So it's this frustration. It's the gap between what we're doing clinically and what is needed to be said for them to actually code things. That's the general field of documentation improvement.
And does ChartWise help connect those dots?
Absolutely. So there's people who are busy with their computers trying to find what is on the chart. That's computer-assisted coding. Let's take what is on the chart and try and code it, and we'll have the computer help us. Clinical documentation improvement helps find what isn't on the chart, but should be. So CDI finds what isn't on the chart. CAC finds, computer-assisted coding finds what is on the chart. So yes, a friend of mine said, you're helping to take the implicit and make it explicit. Trying to take the things that people just, that a doctor-to-doctor communication that is 100% accurate and complete medically, that just isn't going to be codable or billable. And the hospital should get paid for the work that was done. They're entitled to that. And in fact, Medicare says over and over in many different forms, please, we want you to be thorough and complete and accurate. Yes, doctors, collaborate with your coding department. Do this. This is a good thing. Don't get carried away. Don't get creative. And this is where people have gotten on the front page. You don't want to be on the front page of the New York Times with your coding escapades. So we also help with that. People get in trouble when their bill doesn't match the chart. That's the root cause analysis of so much of these medical fraud and these RAC audits. And you hear about, this hospital has to pay back all this money. It's because what was on the chart didn't match what was billed. People are very confused about the cloud. I can't have my data in the cloud. No, I have to own my data. And there's a lot of very smart, very well-intentioned, long-established professionals who want to touch their disk drive. They want to know that their patient data is inside their data center and inside their enterprise. And I find that interesting. I understand it because that's where I started. My first paying job in hospital software was 1969. I've been doing this a long time. I know what an IBM 2314 disk drive looks like. We used to mount them into the machine. And that's very comforting to touch your data. But that doesn't mean that your data center is secure. So the ChartWise data, I'm very proud to say, is first of all, I can say that it's in the Microsoft Azure cloud. Could Microsoft be hacked? Well, sure. I mean, anything could happen. The high-tech standards say that you have to encrypt your data in motion. So data that's being transmitted, you encrypt that transmission. We take it a step further and encrypt the data at rest. So if somebody hacked into the Microsoft data center, they would find an encrypted database sitting there that is virtually, unless you've got supercomputers for 200 years, uncrackable. And when I explain this to hospital data center people, and I say, my data center is probably more secure than yours. Nobody's challenged me on that yet. So security and the high-tech standards, and then look at some of the recent issues that have happened. First of all, laptops, they're a huge vulnerability. But then some of the biggest one, and I won't mention the company, but it was a huge hospital chain, they were hacked by old-fashioned malware working at the low level in the physician's office. And that's where the vulnerability, their data center's fine, but you've got to look at the entire data handling chain. So there's a lot that we're learning. I love the fact that, the cloud is new. It's like, it's really been around for decades. It's got a new name and a cute little logo, but people have been doing work on the network and that type of thing. And in this modern era, hospital IT departments are way too busy. They're doing all of this meaningful use and meaningless use and all these other things that they have to do, and they don't have spare time on their hands. So if there's a vendor that has an opportunity to do a cloud-based solution that requires no hardware, no software, this is a very major, good, important shortcut. But both sides are still learning. The vendors are still learning what are the needs of the hospitals. And I like to say, give them what they need, not what they ask for. Try and find, they're asking for something, find the underlying requirement that they're expressing and make sure you meet those requirements. And the hospitals do need to come up to speed on the modern technologies and be alert to that. And what I just said applies to, I'm looking out over on the floor here, and it applies to practically every booth here. All right, some are just PC-based only, but there's so many web components to all the things that are going on. It touches the backup people, and where does your backup live? And so when my database gets backed up, it's an encrypted backup. So if you intercept tapes on the way to the storage vault, which we don't have, but electronically speaking, you got nothing.
Well, thank you very much for being with me. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Allian. This has been another AHIMA Minute.